We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Podcast. I'm here, your boy T.O.
And your boy Hatch is in the building.
Oh yeah, we got a nice guest today. We share.
Don't say nice. We have a great guest today. Don't say nice. He's not a kitten. You know what I'm saying? Let's say he would have a great guest today.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. That works. Okay. Yeah. Coming to the show today, man. We have a great, a phenomenal guest. We have a two-time Super Bowl champion, Chris Long. We share the locker room, Philadelphia Eagles. Fortunate for me, unfortunate for me, I didn't get to win a Super Bowl, but he did. So we'll talk about that.
Two rings. He'll give you one. How about that?
Yeah, but I have a Hall of Fame ring, and I can probably
That don't count.
That's better than a Super Bowl ring, if you ask me.
Hold on. Let's stay right there for a second. So you would rather be in the Hall of Fame than win a Super Bowl? Is that a true statement?
I mean, it's almost like you didn't achieve one, but you kind of achieved the best of the two.
You think Hall of Fame ring is bigger than a Super Bowl ring?
For me, it acknowledges what I did, because not a lot of players get to go into the Hall of Fame. For me, it kind of
not validates. A lot of players win a Super Bowl,
right? And there are a lot of players that didn't even really contribute, but got Super Bowl rings. There's a lot of players that got Super Bowl rings, but you don't really think too much of it. So, really, does it really matter?
I mean, people could say that about the Hall of Fame. Does that matter if you didn't win the Super Bowl? I just want to get your opinion on that.
When you think about the Hall of Fame, it basically kind of puts you on another pedestal, if you will, because it identifies with some of the greatest to play the game at pretty much every position. It means that you're at the top.
So that it also means you're one of the top. There's 53 Super Bowls. So there's 53 world champions. So that also means you are the top team in the world. And there's only 53 of them. So, I mean, I get it. I just want to get your perspective on how important one ring is to another. But yeah,
right.
Some people think the opposite. I get it.
Right. I mean, would I have liked to have won a Super Bowl?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like I said, it did. I didn't come short. It wasn't like I came short of trying. I definitely put all the effort that I could, you know, considering my situation to definitely win one. I guarantee you, I think you give me, if I get two more passes in that game, we win that game.
You know what? I disagree. But since I'm gonna let we had two NFC championships. I know you don't recognize, but the word is team, so that means there's 53 of us, not just one. I know that's hard for you to fathom.
Let me take a page out of Kobe and MJ's book, That's not your book. You're not in that book. I'm in the same book. There is a ME in team. So regardless of what you may say, I get it, Hatch. I mean, granted, we started out kind of like on the same playing field. But the trajectory of your career and my career, trust me, it's night and day. And
you
I understand.
You got lucky.
You want to put lucky. Me down.
You got I lucky. I never put you down, buddy.
I get it. Not really put me down, but, you know, I get it. You want to take your jabs here and there, but I'm going to take them.
I'm just telling you what God love, and that's the truth.
Hey, all I'm going to do, man, I go upstairs, I go grab that gold jacket, you know what I mean?
It ain't go
I go get that, I go
you
get
know
that
what
bling
that,
bling.
You know what you that know what gold mean? Jacket ain't going to do? It ain't going to keep you dry in the rain. It ain't going to keep you warm in the cold. You know what I'm saying? So, it is what it is.
Let me tell you something. Having that gold jacket, that's almost like having white privilege, homeboy.
we go speak on that white privilege that you do or do not have today on Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast, coming up with Chris Long, 11-year NFL vet, one of the first guys to put his arm around players when they were taking a knee back in 2016 during the NFL season. So, again, he's an honest guy. He's a very opinionated guy. But, again, I think his integrity and his character shows up every time he speaks via Twitter or in an interview. And I'm looking forward to having Chris Long on the show.
Absolutely. Just add to that, just being, you know, kind of one of the first, if not the first, one of the white players, you know, standing up on behalf of, you know, what we're going through right now. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys, I can honestly say, he sees no color. He sees humanity.
Yep, that's good. Coming up, Chris Long, Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast. Check us out on the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. Just go to YouTube / Terrell Owens and check us out.
Yeet! Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast coming up. Yeet! But yeah, I appreciate you coming on the Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast with Chris Long today, man.
Volume
we appreciate you coming through, baby.
No problem, man. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, like I said, 11-year NFL veteran. Again, we know you from not just playing on the field, of course, but you've done a lot of stuff off the field. You have your own podcast now, too, right? Is that correct?
Yep, Greenlight Pod. On Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We've had some good guests, too. You know, we got to get T.O. soon.
Yeah. All right. Get them on there.
Hey, I'm right here, man. Let me know. Right. Green light podcast, huh? That the reason behind with the green door back there?
You know what's funny, T, is that's just my favorite color, so everything in my life usually trends that way. But, you know, this is my office at home. And this is good. This is nice paint here, T.O. This is not some shitty Benjamin Moore. This is fine paints of England. So, yeah, no, green light pod just means it's everything's a green light on my show.
Okay, so is that Bear, that Sharon Williams? What kind of paint is that?
This is fine paint. The fine paints of Europe, T.
Oh, okay, all right.
He went European on you, dog. You ain't ready for that.
I'm the only versatile one on this show. You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah. You see what I'm saying, Chris?
It's off the bat.
All good. But no, we appreciate you coming on the show. Like I said, there's a lot going on in this world, of course. Like I said, you have the COVID-19 situation. We have the protest situation. So before all of this stuff happened, like, what was your regular day-to-day basis? And then we'll kind of get into that stuff.
Man, you know, football players, we don't sit still well. And as much as I feared retirement the last couple of years, and I'm sure, T, you've been there where you're thinking about what's on the other side of this ledge after football, I never imagined my first year would have a pandemic where I had to sit at home for 3 months, which is something I thought I was completely incapable of doing. But I've actually loved it. I've loved being, you know, all the bad things aside, I've loved being home with my family. I got two young boys. You know, we live in a small town, so it's kind of, they say it's unchanged down in town, but I don't even take a chance. I stay my ass home like I'm supposed to. And it's been good. You know, I've been churning out the podcast. I was doing 5 a week at first. Wow. And my wife was like, hey, listen, I didn't marry a podcaster. So
right.
We're down to 3 a week.
There you go.
Yeah.
I can dig it. So again, you know, like I said, you retired in what, 2018, 11 seasons in the NFL. So like, so when I retired, it's just like, you know, I kind of got away from football. I didn't want to do nothing. Like I said, me and T, then we talked to a lot of other players on the show. And it's like, what was that first, you know, like your reaction to, I'm out of football, now what am I going to do? Do I sit home? Do I start the pot? Like, what was that transition like for the first couple months?
Well, I always knew that I was, that I wasn't going to be able to sit still. And I'm always very goal oriented and I like to work. So, I knew I had to do something to stay busy. Now, like, there's a football side to this thing, which is grappling with your ego and saying,
right,
hey, the show goes on. No matter how great you are, the show goes on. My dad was a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So I knew that from a young age that, you know, no matter what I'm doing in football, even having great years, winning Super Bowls, that sort of thing, getting individual accolades, eventually somebody's going to replace you. And so getting over that thing, watching your first fall of football, especially in my case, because I knew I had a couple more years in me physically, but I just had enough. Watching people make plays and you're like, I can make those plays.
Right. I can still do that.
So getting over that, but then also just committing to, okay, I'm going to dive into this podcast stuff with the same tenacity and work ethic that I did and the same accountability that now I have a listenership. And that's like the fans now, where I used to be like, if I don't get this workout in, I'm letting them down. If I don't research shit, if I don't work hard, if I don't record, some days I don't feel like talking, but you do it.
Do you remember what you were doing and how old you were when your dad retired? Do you remember seeing like anything he was doing specifically? Because he went right into TV pretty much.
Yeah, he went right into TV. And TV really wasn't something I wanted to do, because the whole TV thing is you have to totally give up your autonomy. And I know it works for some guys and these TV jobs are great. They pay good. But I'm not a suit guy and I'm not a guy that wants to be told, hey, this is how we want to talk about this today. And it just wouldn't have worked for me. So my dad, that was the medium in 93 when he got out. Think of all the different mediums we have now as players.
Wow. Crazy.
So, you know, he walked in on a whim and got an interview with Fox and he was pretty good at it. So, you know, hadn't looked back. He's one of the few that have been on that crew the entire time.
Yeah, that's crazy looking back. Now it's 93. Wow.
Yeah. And he still looks the same, which is
he does. Yeah, he does.
Right.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna get in here. You guys have, you know, delved into a few topics, but I'm gonna give you the proper introduction that you need, Chris. You know, I'm gonna give you what you need. You know, former defensive end, founder of the Chris Long Foundation, two-time Super Bowl champion. Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles. And as you just mentioned, you know, obviously trying to transition and not really wanting to get into to TV. I know I'm on social media a lot. We've engaged in some of the same topics. You've been very vocal. I didn't really know that about you because we didn't cross paths. But when I played, I kind of got labeled sort of like a villain. And now I think people are embracing really kind of where I was at that time. I was very outspoken. Now things that I did on the football that was kind of just frowned upon. You talk about my touchdown celebrations, and obviously, again, people have portrayed me in a light that's not so favorable. I've been very, very negative. But those things now, I think, has come full circle. And thinking of, you know, talking a full circle, we'll get into the Colin Kaepernick thing. But just thinking about where I am in my career, and kind of where guys are now and the football game is now, everything, like I said, that I was vilified for is now being embraced in the National Football League. So I guess now to kind of just pivot to where we are now, especially the climate that we're in, thinking of, Colin, 2016, I think you were still playing at that time.
Yeah, I was. Yep. Mm-hmm.
He took the knee. What was your response to, I guess, initially when he had done it, and then obviously the speculation that went into it. And obviously he had to go and kind of almost hold a press conference to kind of, I guess, clarify why he knelt. And so obviously now we know why he knelt. A lot of people tried to put the flag at the forefront of his peaceful protest. Yeah. What were your initial thoughts on that?
Well, my first thought was, because I hadn't heard Colin talking about that stuff before, because in 16, you know, activism or players having big voices. I mean, we've tweeted about, see, I had Twitter in 2012, 2010 in St. Louis, and St. Louis is not a big market. So I've been saying shit my whole career. And that's why, like, when I get to Philly, I'm like, oh, people care. Uh-oh. Like, you know, I got away with tweeting whatever I wanted, and I had been socially conscious and weighing in on different things, but you know, Colin wasn't a big presence on social media. So when he first spoke out, there was no background to seeing the knee. And when I first saw it, I was like, let me hear what he's talking about, you know, because that took balls, whatever he's talking about. And
well, to your point, that you took, I mean, that approach to kind of say, okay, let me hear what he has to say versus everybody, I mean, just attacking.
That's the problem. But, you know, like for me, he was preaching to the choir as far as like there being a problem in policing in my eyes. I mean, I lived in, I played in St. Louis, the first group that actually protested in this entire era. And this isn't to put them ahead of Cap or anything. Cap's Cap's reach has been huge, but Stedman Bailey, Kenny Britt, Tavon Austin, when Mike Brown was murdered, you know, back in whatever year it was, we sat through that whole thing, and you could tell that week because there were a couple shootings that week, I believe. And we just could tell we were at this intersection where things were going to start to ratchet up now from a standpoint of consciousness. And like the country was starting to pay attention. And I don't know what it was about Mike. I mean, it was definitely the fact that, you know, the visual of him laying in the street for hours, I think, you know, people seeing that and then the account. But I can remember in St. Louis seeing what happened to those guys when they protested and they ran out of the tunnel with their hands up, you know, the death threats, the letters, the voicemails. The security guy would let me hear the voicemails. He's like, listen to this.
Wow.
And, you know,
did you guys talk about it in the locker room at all prior to that?
Yeah, we kind of knew it was coming. We knew they were doing something. But, you know, it wasn't as this was way more of a rogue action back then. I mean, people weren't doing any symbolic protests. And for those guys to run out in St. Louis, a Midwestern city, all that, it was I'd like to go back and see what everybody's reaction was then, because we have, as you can see from 2016 to now, it's all of a sudden everybody, oh, I suddenly get it. Like what took you so long to suddenly get it? I mean, that's part of the problem. But with Colin, when it first happened, I was like, first, let me hear what he's talking about, because, you know, this is big. And if he can be a good messenger on this thing, you know, he can really move the ball. And, you know, I know Nate Boyer really well. If you've seen Nate Boyer, the Green Beret that, is a big Niners fan, played in the NFL briefly and was Texas Longhorn. Colin reached out to him and said, you know, how can I be as respectful as possible? And Nate Boyer, Green Beret, the very person, the very ideological shield that people that do not want to see progress and change have thrown in front of Colin, it's about the military and the flag, is the one that told him, listen, maybe don't sit, take a knee if you're going to do something. And that way you can show respect and get your point across too. And from there, it's just totally unraveled. And I don't think Colin feels like explaining that anymore.
Right. And I think, you know, it's very apropos. He basically, Nate Boyer gave Colin the green light to
yeah, you know, absolutely.
And so I think, what do you think, just listening that you're talking, I didn't really know about those guys that, that went out and protested when you were in St. Louis. Why do you think the reaction wasn't as great as it was when Colin made the protest? Because I briefly remember a little bit about it, but it didn't really have the impact that Colin had.
Well, again, I mean, and this is the thing. This is the very reason we're asking Drew Brees and those guys to stand up. The guys who can move mountains on a football field are quarterbacks. And here you have a quarterback, a black quarterback, albeit, but a quarterback that's willing to stand up for something like police brutality and, you know, the shortcomings of our criminal justice system and a greater conversation about equality and that sort of thing. This was a big deal. You know, Kenny Britt, Stedman Bailey, Tavon Austin, good players in the league, wide receivers, but for a small market team and a team that was struggling. So, I mean, like, the field could catch on fire in St. Louis and it wouldn't make fucking NFL Live. Okay. So, you know, that's what I lived through in St. Louis. So no matter what you did, nobody was going to know. And so when Colin did it, it was a quarterback, it was a bigger name. And then he had a nice message that it just wasn't about Mike Brown. It just wasn't about, which was fine to just do it about Mike Brown. Hey, we went down to Ferguson. We walked around and took those protests in. Our D-line went down there, but this was a different time. Like, now there's so much company where everybody's like, you know, now there's so many voices that are saying, okay, we can talk about racism now. So everybody's safe to talk about it. Those guys did something really unsafe, as did Colin, as did players that protested in 2016. And now they've made it so that you know, the dam's broken and everybody's safe to talk about it, which mm-hmm. means words are not as important right. in 2020. We got to prove that we're all about it.
Right. Yeah, I heard you mention Drew Brees. Obviously, I admire you. I know, like I said, we've crossed paths, but I admire the stance that you've made, and I've heard people, you know, speak on about you sort of like being the first like white person, especially in the National Football League, to stand up. And as you mentioned, we need powerful voices. We need people, white people like yourself. And you mentioned a guy like Drew Brees. Why don't you think guys like your Peyton Mannings, your Tom Brady's, these guys, again, in positions of power that can obviously help push the message, try to help push change. Why don't you think these guys are speaking up? And then I'll add Jerry Jones in the mix as well. Yeah. Because Donald Trump, basically, when Colin did this in 2016, it was almost like he ordered the owners to not re-sign Colin when all this yeah. stuff happened. And for me, to do that on that stage, him being the president of the United States and then kind of infiltrate with the NFL, for me, that's systemic racism. Right. And then now everybody has basically harped on why or expressed their opinions as to why Jerry Jones hasn't said a peep since all this happened. And I know for a fact that when all this happened, when Donald Trump ordered, you know, all these owners, I guess, in his own little way, not to resign Colin and to, you know, basically condemn these guys that were in support of Colin and called them sons of bitches. And Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, one of the most historic franchises in all of football, he hasn't said a word. Even when that happened, he mentioned to his player, he told his players, if you protest, you will not play. So why don't you, why, in your estimation, yeah. why isn't more white guys speaking up?
Well, I think in general, you touched on a few of the issues. Is first off, I mean, we have some big name white players that haven't said much about it. I thought J.J. Watt, that was big of him to say. He plays in Houston. I'm sure there's a lot of fans down there that don't want to hear from J.J. Watt, who's been like the mascot for all that is good about white America. Yeah. You know, he's a fan favorite. And he's a great player. So his power is evident when he speaks. I mean, he can move mountains. So somebody like JJ, who's commercially successful, who's got endorsements and that sort of thing, watch. You think anybody's going to like JJ any less? Like, no. Like, people are going to listen to JJ, and if people don't want to hear the message, they're going to tune it out like they always have. Right. And I think that's why, like, look at somebody like a JJ. It's not like his, you know, he spoke out on it. It's not like his career's over. It's not like people are going to – and right. that's the privilege of being a white player. So we need to use that. I mean, you know, and some of my peers that protested are not in the league. I do believe that, you know, if you protest or you know, speak about protests and, you know, favorably, you might have a problem on your hands. You know, like mm-hmm. I was one of the first guys to talk at length in the league about approving Colin's message. White, mm-hmm. especially white guy, but right. like it was important to me. Now, when I left St. Louis, I was team captain. You know, 40 sacks in 4 years, got hurt 2 years, ended up in New England. Okay. I got 5-6 teams knocking down my door before I go to New England. Right. And this is after 2 years of shitty injured tape. Mm-hmm. I leave New England after totally reviving my career and I don't get a single call. Mm. And in New England, I talked at length about Colin. You know, mm-hmm. I was the white voice you were hearing. Okay. For mm-hmm. whatever that's worth. And I do believe that, you know, some teams are like, if this guy's like with the protests or has publicly spoken out, I never lost my job, you know, that sort of thing. But there's definitely been players that have been blackballed over this stuff.
Right. And I think that is, well, I guess that's the elephant in the room, right? Because, again, when I was with the Vikings, right, Denny Green was our head coach, right, back in the day. I personally think Denny Green would have probably took a knee and all of us would have took a knee. Right. Mm-hmm. But 2020, somebody's going to have to do it. So the whole team does it because of like what you're saying, if the whole team does it, then they can't blackball you. You see what right. I'm saying? But they can, yeah. if it's one or two guys here or there, 10 guys, 15. And I think that now there's 2020, I think that cannot be the case. I mean, even today, Bill O'Brien came out and said, Houston Tech, and said he's going to take a knee with his team.
Yeah.
If he does
it's been more normalized. That's the point right. of like being the guy. It's like Carson Wentz, you know, and T, you pay attention to stuff because you're, you know, you're plugged in with Philly. Carson Wentz, who I had no idea would do this. I know he's not a racist. I know he's a good man. But in a time like this, not enough to not be racist. You got to be anti-racist. So he's a real Christian.
Right.
And he doesn't hide behind his faith. He leans into all the good things about his faith, and he delivers a message where he specifically calls out systemic racism, which is a big fucking deal for a white quarterback from South Dakota. Absolutely. With five Labrador retrievers who hangs out in a duck blind most of his day. Right. To come out and make that statement. So the point is that this is something where you build and build and build on momentum, and now it's more normal in 2020. In 16, we had the luxury of saying, Malcolm Jenkins put his fist up, and I would protest with him. But we had the luxury of saying, and different players had the luxury of saying, well, there's more ways than one to get the point across, and like it's about the work you do too. We support Colin, taking a knee is how he wants to do it. This guy wants to protest this way. I think this year – it's going to be, if I was still playing, I'm sure I'd be hearing these conversations in the locker room. If we do something, we got to do it all together.
All together. Yeah. Because if you talk about just the black players, let's say, right. If it was the top 10 quarterbacks right now, five are black, right. Five are African-American. You got Dak, you got Mahomes, you got Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. If all of them took a knee, you can't. Like I said, you can't cut them. You can't – the NFL, you're just going to be mad. But more importantly than for that to happen, the whole team has to follow. Don't just let him go through that experiment by himself, because Colin Kaepernick was the experiment. And for Colin, it didn't work. But for the world, it did work a little bit if we can say, okay, yeah, it took 4 years for it to work.
Well, listen, I think the big thing about Colin is it's twofold. I had one person on Twitter ask me when I tweeted about Colin in the heat of this thing. He said, this is 11 o'clock on a Wednesday in June, mm-hmm. 2020, 4 years after the fact. Chris, do you think that Colin picked the right time in the game to get his message across and to raise awareness? And I said to the dude, I go, guy, you are asking me about Colin Kaepernick 4 years after the fact,
right,
on a Wednesday night in June in the summer, mm-hmm. when there's no sports. What do you think? I think the awareness piece worked. I think the listening part is what didn't work. So
right.
I think that's the biggest thing. He has moved the ball forward. He's made it so mm-hmm. this thing can bust wide open and different leaders mm-hmm. can emerge. I mean, mm-hmm. this is – He did a great thing.
Yeah, because that's what kind of me and T are talking about. Again, it's not about just, you know, black people talking about racism now. It's black yeah, right. and white talking about it together. It's like, long as the conversation is happening, I think that's a plus. You look at 2020 protest compared to a 1970 or 1960, 1992 protest. Those were 95% African-American. 2020 protest, it was 50-50, if not more white than African-American
yeah.
protests.
Yeah, out in the peaceful protests and all that. Like, yeah, yeah. It does warm my heart to see that. Like, I hate
– Absolutely.
You're so cynical at this point, you know, and maybe there's no cynicism among people that just arrived at the conclusion like 3 weekends ago that there's racism in the United States.
The shocker.
But for people that knew it – you can be so cynical that everything's an okie doke and everything's like, I don't even want to remark on the fact that I'm hopeful right now, but I do feel some hope, and hope mm-hmm. is so dangerous, you know?
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, seeing all those different faces out there, seeing people from every
different countries. Oh, it's amazing.
You can't tell me there aren't a number of people in this country, white people, that care about this thing. We just have to make our voices louder.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to Hatch's point, it's just not a majority of one race talking about it. This is a multitude of ethnic backgrounds that are discussing this topic. It's white, black, it's Hispanics, and whatever race. It's Asians.
European, they're over there in Germany and like protesting.
Thousands
and thousands. I mean, I get chills, and I've gotten chills.
I did.
Right. Hey, trust me, I get it.
I love it.
Gotten chills just watching, and I've been on social media. Like, bro, I've been so sleep deprived because since this happened, bro, I have been so sleep deprived, just finding myself, you know, sometimes like mad, sad, like yeah. just angry, just a roller coaster of emotions. I'm scrolling through like different just 1 a.m. social media platforms. And bro, I'm like, I'm talking about 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm talking to people. I was in Florida at one point. I'm in LA right now. I'm talking to people here on the West Coast. I'm talking at my time. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. We're talking about this very issue, man. And it's so alarming and kind of surprising too, that I've talked to some of my white friends. And as you mentioned to, Chris, about, you know, this has been an eye opener for everybody. And then I think some of the white people that have now started to acknowledge that there is racism is a shock to me, because again, it's something that never was discussed.
But do you believe that though? Do you believe when a white person says, oh, "I didn't know there"? Do you believe that statement out of their mouth?
I think there's two things. I do believe, first and foremost, I think that the kitchen was too hot. Let's just say that. Like, mm-hmm. It'd be perfectly acceptable if you were just honest with me and said, I didn't just realize this. You know what? I wish I spoke up, but I was afraid and I didn't know how to talk about it.
There you have it.
Because you know what? If you're authentic about this thing in this conversation and you don't have any hate in your heart and you are a loving, caring person who's empathetic, that'll come through. Just say, mm-hmm. you know what? In 2016, there weren't barely any players talking about it. And I was afraid. And also it's a minefield, because I don't want to say, like, you know, you, when you're white, you can't say certain things like, I know how you feel. Like, you know, like,
right.
White people are like, what do I do? But then there's also people that are hiding behind that. They don't really care. They post a black square and then the next day they're back to not giving a shit. And then I really do believe that there's white people that because our society is so segregated, mm-hmm. and not everybody lives in a locker room and plays in a locker room with meeting people from different walks of life and that sort of thing. I can't speak on what that's like to not be like that. You know, my dad lived that life. Mm-hmm. I got to live that life. I'm lucky. But there's a number of people who live in white neighborhoods who don't interface with any black mm-hmm. people. And so they also don't see racism, because if you live on your street, if the police serve and protect and they're not pulling you over with bias and harassing mm-hmm. you, then you think the police are there to serve and protect. So sometimes you have to have a big awakening, I think.
So I want to dig a little bit deeper into that, because, I mean, you're fair, right? You're fair. You speak out. You have a presence of this honesty. Where did this all come from? Because, of course, you're an adult now. You're a grown man. Yeah. But it didn't just start. You know what I'm saying? So where did this all come from?
Before you go there, Hatch, I think, obviously, before Chris says anything, I will probably bet that it probably has something to do with his upbringing, the way he was raised.
Of course, yeah.
Because
when
you think about, because I, like I said, I think, Hatch, I've told you this before. Like, I was confronted some years, probably like within my first 2 or 3 years in the league, and I went back home. You know, I stayed with my grandmother. And so I was the biggest thing to come out of my city. And so I was at this little...
Must have been a small city.
So I was at this diner, and so I'm at the bar, and so wasn't a lot of people in there, but I noticed to my left there was a father, and he had his kid in the booth with him. So they were getting ready to leave, and so he approached me, and I was in San Francisco at the time, and he had his kid in his arms, and he was basically just speaking to the kid. The kid had to be no more like maybe 4 or 5, And he goes, addressed the kid's name. He goes, yo, this is Terry Lawrence. He played here at Benjamin Russell. He's playing with the San Francisco 49ers right now. He's playing in the NFL. So the kid was like, who, that nigger right there?
What?
Bro,
wow.
No, this is dead honest, bro. This is dead honest.
Alabama.
Right. It's I've written a book, and I put it in the book. And so for me, I honestly, being in the South, I had heard my grandmother and people talk about racism, this and that and the other, and how whites feel and this and that. And so I just didn't know how to react. And so I can't exactly remember what I did. And really, I can't remember what the dad said, but I think he just basically tried to tell the kid, no, don't say stuff like that or what have you. But mm-hmm. I didn't, in that moment, Chris and Hatch, I didn't get mad at the kid. There was no way I could get mad at the kid, because I was so aware at that time. I'm like, I can't be mad at this kid, because this kid is the product of his environment. So he obviously had to have been hearing this. This kid is like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So you have to understand, like, when you talk about racism and how you think some white people may be racist or why they aren't, I think their upbringing, the way that they're brought up, has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think what's wild is that also in that story, just like what jumps out at me is not only is that absurd and, you know, I think the further south you go, it's just more thinly veiled. I mean, people that think there's no racism in the North or whatever, but it's crazy to me that whoever taught him that, if it was his dad or if it was somebody close to him, presumably would have run you down for an autograph, but yet refers to people that look like you with that word. Mm. That's crazy. Hey,
but that's
how
the thing.
And that's the whole thing about like loving black culture and not loving black people, or loving black athletes and not loving black people. And that's the most frustrating thing, that these fans will sit there and watch and wear your jersey and that sort of thing. And it's disappointing to think that they don't look at my teammates, you know.
I want to go back because I've been so engaged on social media, and I just didn't want to be kind of at the forefront just on social media. So I've kind of just, you know, immersed myself, you know, I guess you want to say on the front lines. I got a message from a couple of people out here in Los Angeles, and they asked me about, you know, obviously contributing to the cause or what have you. And I booked a flight like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, jumped on a 7 a.m. flight, drove straight to a protest that they had right outside the forum, I think around like 11:30 or 12. And then they had a big one, around noon that was at the Pan Pacific Park and so West Hollywood. And so I left the one at the forum, and so I was going home, and so I texted the girl, and I'm like, yo, it's like, are you guys still there? She goes, yeah. And so me and my friend, we drove to West, kind of like West Hollywood, Pan Pacific Park, where near Melrose. And so we got out of the car, and I really, honestly, I didn't know what to expect. And so this one was for Breonna Taylor, obviously the girl that got shot by the officers, you know, in the middle of the night, got shot 8 times in the chest area, went in with a no-knock warrant. And yeah, she was one of those essential workers. And me and my friend, we approached the back of the park, and dude, I had no idea what I was getting into. When I walked around that corner, bro, it was like, I saw like thousands and thousands of people, and they had one little stand with a megaphone addressing all those people, bro. I was like, yo, this is a movement. Like, it gave me chills just to sit there from afar. And I walked a little bit closer till I got to the stand. And bro, I was so amazed. It was so many white people out there, bro, protesting, being allies, understanding or trying to understand in support of what we've been talking about for 400 plus years. And I thought that was such a remarkable moment. And for me, I didn't see it as a white and black thing. I saw it as a human race. It was a together thing. And I think being a part of that one, and then I did a march for Colin Kaepernick just yesterday. That in itself, man, it was an eerie feeling, but it tells you and it shows you that change is kind of around the corner. Because we've already mentioned it. This is just not a regional thing. This is just not a U.S. thing. This is a global thing. And I think it has caught wildfire around the country that people are making changes as it relates to social injustice, police brutality, and just equality for the black race across the country. And so I know we talked about earlier, and it brought me back to something, because like I said, it was, you know, you start talking about black, white, this and that and the other. We all can bring up examples of, you know, where we feel like, you know, there was, you know, discrimination or it could have been racism here and there. But you mentioned, Chris, that you took like you 2 years, you were kind of non-productive, and you probably didn't think that you would get another job. Mm-hmm. So I've been in defense of Colin Kaepernick, you know, since the whole initial protest. And now that I've been on the forefront and really being an advocate that the NFL owes him an apology. And I quite frankly, I feel like they owe him an opportunity to get back into the league. And a lot of these fans are like, oh, he was terrible his last year, this and that and the other. He can't do this. He can't do that. He's washed up. And it brings me back to your point. Because I'm not going to ask you, do you think? I know probably it's a fact that you said you were non-productive for 2 years.
Yeah.
Probably didn't think you would get another job, but you did.
Yeah.
Colin, he's black. Yeah. They're talking about his one last year or whatever where he was non-productive or what have you. He still hasn't gotten a job.
Yeah.
Do you think in a sense that it's race related?
It's definitely message. It's definitely message related. There's no way it has nothing to do with what he did. I mean, it's at this point, 4 years in, it's like, I'm not even going to try to argue with some people because they just
reject
every argument. So I've kind of like stopped being in the weeds on trying to prove that a guy that I played on the football field that I hit in 2016, that I rushed. And I saw and prepared for on a very bad San Francisco team who, if anything, was unspectacular at quarterback that year. And really the bad year, the year before that, he was bad. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the bad year. 16, he was trending back up. Mm-hmm. And the team was bad, but he wasn't throwing a bunch of picks. You know, the problem was not him. And people love to ignore context when it comes to certain quarterbacks. They don't want to give the benefit of the doubt, but then on the other end of things, they give some quarterbacks every chance.
And so it
was just too clear to me. And that's not to say that every player that has knelt has been blackballed. There's a big difference, though, between my buddy Mike Bennett taking a knee, who, although is arguably a star in the NFL, is not a quarterback. Mm. You can't have the face of the franchise. These guys are thinking, mm-hmm. you know, kneeling. And that I think that's why he was shown the door and has not been let back in.
Well, it also has a lot to do with him being the first. I think it's the life that we live. If you're the first one that's going to step out, you're going to get slaughtered. But over time, then that helped out. But again, is it too late for Cap? You know, I mean, nobody knows. But
I don't think so. I know this guy right here. He hasn't been a Cap fan. And I know we talk about down years. We've all kind of had some down years.
Yeah.
I don't know about me. I don't think I've had any down years.
You had down years.
That guy right there.
You're having a down year right now.
Hey, stop trying to be relatable, man.
Hey, that guy right there. He's had a number of bad years, but we're not going to talk about. Hey,
they were all good years. I just didn't have the numbers to show for it. But to me, I had a good year. But with the Cap thing, I just don't want them to give Cap a job. And say, we gave him a job, we're doing you a favor, so all you all shut up now. I think it's bigger than that. I think it's something for Cap to be an ambassador of the NFL, Cap to be an ambassador for 32 NFL cities and start a coalition. I think things like that are bigger and they'll live longer. Because if what the NFL did yesterday, give us $250 million for what? If you want to give somebody money, you give Cap $10 million a year, let him put together a team of 10 more people, and you guys go in the communities of 32 NFL cities, and you guys can start moving the needle talking about social injustice. Like that, to me, will move the needle, not being a backup on the Baltimore Ravens.
I think, too, it all boils down to if Cap really wants to play as well. But again, I think if you look at every division, he's better, if not as good as.
That's not even the point no more. To me, that's not the point no more.
Right. But the thing is, we feel like he was stripped of an opportunity to further along his career. Because as Chris said, he was sort of trending. Like I said, there's going to be a little dip here and there. But once this this protest happened, again, they basically just stripped him of his livelihood. And that's what I say. If he's willing, again, like I said, to be given an opportunity, not just put him on a squad. Like, if he wants to.
But he's not going to be a starter. I mean, he's not going to come in as a starter.
Right. Even the workout that he had, that wasn't even fair. They tried to railroad him with that workout.
Mm. Yeah. I think he's certainly capable of playing in the league. And, you know, there is a side of it where you look at it and like, well, let's not, if you're trying to pick a place for Cap, let's not just throw him somewhere where he has no shot to compete. And they're going to then it's going to be one of those self-fulfilling prophecies. So the whole playbook here is, and I don't know if this is the playbook, but you let a guy who wasn't playing great ball, he was a bottom 10 quarterback. If he was in the low 20s, that still means he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. True. He wasn't playing great, but you take a guy out for 4 years and then you drop him back in when it's like, oh, we get it now. Right. But then, you know, the absence of 4 years becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. He's rusty. He's been out of the game. And when you're behind the eight ball trying to climb a depth chart, it's way different. So I think it's risky, you know, because then they could do the, hey, we checked that box. We don't care anymore. And I don't think that the money's a bad thing. I think that the money has to be paired with an acknowledgement, though. And that's the whole point to me. Because Players Coalition, you know, I've been a part of it before. You know, I do a lot of work with Players Coalition. They do good work. Malk does good work. There's plenty of room for everybody in this whole thing. It should have never been like this guy or this guy. It should always be like, let's all tackle this together. And Cap has to be a part of the conversation. And he has to be in a leadership role.
Yeah. And again, I think he needs to be in that NFL office in a leadership role and give him a specific lane to be in. And I think that will answer a lot of the questions that were like, what are you going to do, NFL? Because as you know, in America, all we do is we throw money at the situation and people go away. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't think this is that. I think it's something bigger than that. I think it's something needed more in our community that's going to move the needle for the next 5 to 10 years. Rather than like this old 3 month process that we're in right now.
You got to keep the pressure on, man. It's not like, you know, like the pressure is what's making things change. It's not money. You know, it's not pressure. People in the streets peacefully protesting, you know, being heard, like, you know, and then also this whole thing, I believe the best thing that's come out of this. And even with the Donald Trump thing, good thing that the saving grace on this thing is it's driven out all the people who are just pieces of shit about this stuff because they feel emboldened by that guy in office. And they also feel like there's nowhere to hide right now. The last couple of weeks, if you're a corporation, if you're a coach, if you're a player, like we see you. So like, you know, I think that's actually, it's a good thing, you know, and, you know, addition by subtraction with some people and some entities.
Yeah.
What efforts are you making? I guess I would say to some of the white players to try to, I mean, again, be pillars as you are to kind of speak out. Some of those guys that may be straddling the fence, have you reached out to, you know, again, some of these white players that are in positions of power to can maybe kind of gauge their temperature on how they feel about possibly standing with you, us in this fight?
Well, usually the way I do it is, you know how locker rooms are, guys. Yeah. I mean, it's a bunch of great conversations happen because people feel safe having them and they trust each other. And that's another thing about integration and knowing each other and like a lot more good conversations can have if we know each other and we operate together. So I think that like I've had plenty of good convos with guys over the last 4 years when they've kind of been like, hey, how do you navigate this? How did you first talk about this? Like, what do you say? What do you don't say? And these are real, well-intentioned, good questions. And I have them too. And I ask my friends. But, you know, in a time like this, I can give white players a little bit of advice on, you know, how to go about it from my perspective. But I'm also like, hey, call one of your black teammates.
Have the conversation. Yep.
Yeah, you know, they're not gonna run you off the phone or yell at you.
Right.
Like, it's not on the other side of this thing. Once you become a part of this, it's not like, you know, people radicalize you. People are literally fighting for equality. This is not a radical concept. You know, so I think when players ask me, I share with them my perspective, but also, I think in general, I'm like, you know, maybe I can't answer all your questions. You have to go educate yourself. And I think one of the biggest things that guys have stepped out, like a Carson Wentz, I'm like, you need to read. You need to educate yourself. So there's no cognitive dissonance when you go out in the world and you're arguing with people or discussing things with people and you're trying to pass your knowledge on and normalize what you know. You have to be armed with like at least the knowledge that you can prove your point. So I think that like educating yourself and not being afraid to step out. And I have reached out to some people because I have a podcast like y'all. So cool. I'll tell guys, I'm like, listen, this is going to be a safe place for you to talk about race and racism. Yep. If you want to talk about it for the first time, call me, man. We'll set it up and you can make your statement and I'm not going to fuck you over on it. If you misspeak a word, we can have somebody listen to it to make sure it's going to come across right, because these are concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I love the honesty and the, you know, it's just like the
transparency.
The people don't understand. It's okay to talk. They really don't understand that concept. It's okay to talk to each other. We don't even have to agree with each other, but we can still talk to each other. It's like, I think that's the problem part of
most people consume this conversation on Twitter.
Right. And, yeah.
And Twitter is a war zone, man. Like, I swear to you, like, people imagine this conversation being just such an uncomfortable thing. And it can be, it should be like this whole thing, but also like, if you have friends, they want to help. They want to help you understand. Like, I know it's not y'all's job to help me understand as a white guy, but there's going to be questions I need to ask. So like, why not just call a friend? They're not going to, you know, kill you over it. It's all good, dude.
Right. I think that's, speaking of that, I think, is that what you feel that Drew Brees did after the statement that he made, you know, making it about the flag and not really addressing the issues at hand? Kind of being insensitive to kind of like the climate that we're in. Again, it was like an apology on top of an apology, then followed by a post addressed to the president.
Yeah. When I first saw Drew do that, it disappointed me. And I talked about it on my pod. It's not my place to give forgiveness on something like this. People ask me like, well, when is Drew Brees forgiven? I'm like, I don't know. Don't ask me. I think what Drew did that was disappointing was you could hear it in people's voices, and anger is like love disappointed, right? It's one of the truest things. So what happened when the kid, and I can't even, Jake Fromm sent a really racist message. Yep. Nobody gave a shit because nobody cares about Jake Fromm. Just any young player in the league that doesn't have a long future, there wasn't that visceral reaction. You know why people were so mad about Drew Brees? Because he's Superman. And everybody was like, Drew Brees lifted, you know, a diverse city out of Katrina.
Right.
Spent almost 20 years in locker rooms with guys, supposedly having conversations, including four after Cap, where I know we've talked about this.
Right.
You know, has worked on causes that, you know, he's worked with people that don't look like him. And if that Superman doesn't get it, then it's disheartening. It's really disheartening. Right. I even felt like kind of like, damn, dude, because every time I meet Drew Brees, he's one of those guys that you're just like, I fucking trust that guy.
Right.
It's almost like, your leader portrayed you.
But I think what he missed was what everybody's saying is, and this is what everybody has fucked up that's so defensive about being white, is you can like the flag. That's not the problem.
That's not even the problem.
The issue wasn't that you're not going to get run out of the league. And by the way, Drew hasn't been punished. So it's not like we're living in some communist country.
Right.
Like, which you also want to make it out to be when you're like, well, Drew Brees says one thing and look at what happened to him. Like, no, people use their freedom of speech. And so did he.
Right.
And they just disapprove of the fact that he led with his and only his perspective about what the flag is. And that was where he fucked up, was because he started with using the word disrespect when it was never about the military. Mm-hmm. And then being like, this is what the flag means to me. Well, Drew, no shit. Right. But like, what you're saying is that your perspective is more important than everybody else's. And there's only one perspective to have, which is totally bullshit.
Right.
But I think he can redeem himself. Right. I mean, if you guys were teammates, I don't know. It's not for me to say.
Well, again, I think I've talked to the whole team. I had a team meeting via Zoom the next day, and a lot of his teammates from Cameron Jordan and Michael Thomas, they came out and said, I believe Drew, right? I believe his perspective, it was what it was. Now he's apologized and he sees it our way. And maybe it took that slip up for him to see it, you know, the correct way. And that's, again, you have to take the good out of it. And I think that's it's a plus at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, he might be turned into a voice for good just because he's been like, and also an example, like if you're going to talk about this thing, people watching, like say something that you've sat and thought about, because I thought one of the most disappointing things was, and you guys know this, if you're getting a big name like Drew Brees to do a Yahoo interview, Drew Brees knows that he's going to be asked about that. It's the middle of the pandemic. You haven't done an interview in months that I've seen. What do you think they're going to ask you about? So you had time to formulate that. And so that was the disappointing. That's why to me, it was like, I get why people are really mad, because it's not like he just stumbled. I mean, he just fucked this up, but I still do believe that we're a very forgiving country.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't necessarily, and this is the problem, I don't think Drew's a racist. I know Drew's, I gotta know Drew's not a racist. I can't say for sure about anybody, but I think one of the biggest problems is, again, it's not enough to just not be racist. You have to actually have some fucking nuts right now and stand up for guys that you've been in locker rooms with for 20 years.
Yeah. Right. I love how you say that. It's not enough to not be racist. You have to be anti-racist.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a great saying. Yeah. Well, hey, Chris Long, we appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. Like I said, I appreciate the honesty and your candidness. And it's like, again, it's a breath of fresh air to get your perspective and people can understand. It's not really a white or black thing. It's just not, you know, like I said, it's about humanity, about equality. And there's all these, but they say good apple versus bad apple. Like, no, we're just trying to bring everybody together. And that's kind of what it's about.
Yeah,
and absolutely. And if you're white and listening, man, like, it's not that scary to just admit.
Right.
Like, nobody's going to be like, you're not an asshole because you admit something like this or you talk to people. So it's my pleasure, guys.
All right, man. It's been definitely a pleasure. And definitely for all the people that are out there listening, I don't need to give you guys the green light to check out this guy, Chris Long's podcast. Green Light podcast, hosted by none other than himself. Definitely a very introspective individual, very candid, transparent. He's going to give it to you how it is. And that's what we like, and that's what we need. We need more people like Chris Long. And I, again, sure, just like Hash, we appreciate you, you know, just providing your time. Again, like I said, this is definitely a time and a climate where I think everybody's attention span is kind of all over the place, being pulled in different directions. Mm-hmm. I know for me, even just with me just standing, being at the forefront, because I, as I tried to allude to earlier, I didn't want to just, I was so inundated with my phone and just on different social media platforms, and I'm seeing all these protests and I'm seeing everything happening, especially the first couple of days. You know, you're seeing the looting, the rioting, the protesting. There's so many, like, you know, conspiracy theories that were thrown out there when the, you know, when people watched him die, then they were kind of dissecting when the medic came and saying that, you know, the medics weren't medics and that it was improper on how they got him on the stretcher. There, I heard people say, oh, he's not dead. All types of stuff. It was a stunt. So much stuff swirling around this whole thing. And for me, I realized that when I first saw it, and I still haven't seen the whole 10-minute clip of it, but I know the guy was on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I saw probably 3 to 5 minutes of it. I saw it the next day after he had died. So I knew he had died. So I didn't watch the entirety of the video. But as I watched the first 3 to 4 or 5 minutes, I couldn't take myself to watch the end. I just kind of just fast forwarded it. And then I saw toward the end, like, he was lifeless. I was like, this is unbelievable. Like you said, it's absurd to kind of see this unfold before your very eyes. And I think that what seeing somebody die, just, it's almost like, it's like normal. A movie. Right.
It's too normal now. It's become too right. normal. And did you see Dave's thing last night?
I saw that. Powerful.
No. Bro, he nailed it. He's talking about the most scared he's ever been in his life, just over an earthquake, and he thought he was going to die. And he said, that was a 30-second experience. I have all these thoughts.
30 seconds.
For 8.5+ minutes. And it's sad, man. It's sad. But I got hope, man.
I think what brought especially a lot of white people, I think white moms around, is the fact that, and I've heard it from different people, especially like mothers of color, the fact that he was on his last breath and he was saying, I can't breathe. And he was calling out to his mom that's no longer living. I think that touched, and I think it pulled at a lot of people's heart. And for me, I went to the funeral and Eric Garner's family was there. Ahmaud Arbery's family was there. I think Mike Brown's family was there, bro. And to listen to George Floyd's niece speak, bro, I was taken into tears. I was brought to tears because, and even one of his sisters basically said, he goes, man, he was her real life Superman. Mm. And to hear them describe just the human that he was. And then opposed to some of these people that are attacking him because of his past criminal activity, as if that was a reason for him to die. Dude, it brought me to a place to where I was more motivated. I was more inspired to do what I'm doing now. And like I said, I'm never one to try to hide behind anything. I've always been a person that kind of believed in what I believe in, and I stood for it, and I stand in my truth. And even with Colin Kaepernick standing in his truth and everything coming full circle now to this, where we are now, it is it's been gut-wrenching, but I definitely feel that change is around the corner. And again, we appreciate you, Chris, for coming on, because again, we need more people like yourself, like you. And more that we can get you guys and more white people to kind of be allies. And just, you know, like I said, we understand that all lives matter, but at this state of where we are now, as it relates to the history. Wait,
I need another analogy to feed to people that say all lives matter. Have you heard all of them? Have you heard all the good ones?
There's a lot.
like if there was a breast cancer benefit and somebody busted in the door and interrupted the keynote speech and said all cancers matter, they would be run out of the building. Absolutely. I mean, and the only way that works perfectly is if breast cancer was criminally underfunded as a research project.
Right.
Anyways.
There are so many analogies. Like I said, it just kind of puts everything in perspective. But where we are, we're at this point in time, Black lives do matter. And I think just a visual, and I think quarantine happening, and I think everybody being in their homes and they happen to witness this, that brought so much exposure. And I think it brought to light really kind of what we as the Black race have been saying for so long. And I think everything, like my grandmother told me, like everything, and it, for me, it's such a tragedy that this had to happen. But God don't make mistakes. And so, again, he has been a sacrifice for so many. And he's going to go down in history. When you think about what he's done, like there are people that the pastor said it. He was a humble human being that lived in the third ward, where only people in that community and his family knew of him. This guy is known worldwide.
Yeah,
I mean, they even gave a speech to where the president of Ghana, basically what has happened, he will be etched in stone. They put something together to as a remembrance of George Floyd, because again, this is a big turning point in our history. And it's been remarkable. It's been amazing. Again, we still have a long way to go, but again, it's going to take everybody's efforts. And again, Chris, I can't thank you enough. I know I've said it, a couple of times now, but I appreciate you coming on. And
thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Chris, man. You stay healthy. You stay appreciate safe you out there, brother. Get your popcorn ready podcast with Chris Long, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sir. See you guys.
Thanks, man.
All right, brother.
Thanks, T. Thanks, guys.
All right, no doubt.
So that was a good show, man. Chris Long, again, character, integrity, all of those things. I put him up there. Like I said, I've talked to a lot of people, especially a lot of ex-players, and we just don't have that vulnerability that he has to be honest and say, this is who I am, and I'm not, I'm not ashamed of it. I'm going to be this person every single day. And I just commend him for it.
Very relatable guy. Reminds me of myself.
No, you're not relatable. No, not at all.
What? The things that you just mentioned? Did you listen to those adjectives that you said?
Character.
Character.
Zero.
Integrity.
Zero.
Transparency.
100 million.
What?
You have transparency. I wish I could see through you instead of seeing your face. Hey, but man. Yes. So Chris Long was a great guest on the show.
He's white and I'm black. We just,
two peas in a pod.
We're two of a kind, Hatch.
Hey, y'all go be that. Hey, let's talk about the three and out. Here's our three and out segment with Chris Long. I think one of the biggest things I took away from today's show is when he said it's not enough to not be racist. In today's climate, you have to be anti-racist. And I just stuck with me because, so many people out there, like they say, well, I'm doing okay. And I'm not calling him the N-word. So I'm not racist. Like, no, you need to be anti-racist. You see something out there, you need to talk about it, have the conversation and kind of move the needle forward yourself.
Yeah, it's like kind of like when you go in, you go into the airport, and obviously with all this terrorist stuff that has happened, it's kind of like that slogan that they have in the airport. If you see something,
say something. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I definitely get that. I guess one of my takes would be is kind of the lack of media coverage. Again, did he say? Was it back in 2012?
Around there, yeah, when the Rams.
When he was with the Rams at the time. So they were still the St. Louis
Rams, yeah.
Right. And so, when Kenny Britt and Tavon Austin, they came out of the tunnel with their fist in the air, I guess in protest of some of the murders that had happened there. Obviously, we talk about just the time period and climate of where we are. Obviously that was 8 years ago. That didn't get nearly as much Zero. Media coverage as we are having now with, again, if you think about around 2012, you think 4 years later when Colin Kaepernick, he takes a knee. And then now, that was 2016. Mm-hmm. And now 4 years later, all of this has come full circle. And we are in a situation now where, again, everybody has to do better.
Absolutely. Everybody. And I think the third thing for our Three and Out segment is when he spoke on the locker rooms and how he and his teammates and like you and your teammates, you could speak freely in the locker room. And we're trying to make the world like a big locker room. Like, yeah, that's great. And again, we understand it because we're in the locker room. So we're just trying to get the regular public to understand. Have the conversation. It's not like he said it. It's not going to hurt you. Like, we're not going to, if a white person calls a black dude, so I want to have this conversation. Oh, what the F you calling me for? Like, we're not going to do that. It's a real conversation. It's a real problem here in America, in the world, as we've kind of discussed before. But have the conversation, start the conversation, and we're just trying to move forward. And it's not 1960. It's not 1980. Let's not act like it. Let's really, kind of commend when somebody is moving the needle forward when it comes to racism. And then, like you said, when you're not, call those people out because those people need to be called out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it, man. That was
a good one.
Definitely a heartfelt discussion. Yeah. I know obviously we want to talk a little bit about some other things to bring some levity to what was going on. But again, I think this is a topic that needs to be had and discussions that need to be had. And as you said, this is kind of like that call that we're making, to Chris Long, having that dialogue, having these discussions and not being afraid to kind of share how you feel. And I think when you talk about the locker room, those conversations obviously can permeate through the locker room, but can we get those conversations, to permeate outside the locker room? Because it's one thing to kind of keep it in house. This is not one of those topics that needs
to be in house because
this has been a world. This has been a worldwide, a global issue for us. This has been a historic issue for 400 plus years. And so people are starting to figure it out now. So, like I said, I don't condemn the protests and none of that stuff that happened, in the beginning. I'm not condoning everything, but I felt where they were coming from.
Yeah.
Like Martin Luther King said, the riot, a riot is the language of the unheard. And so there you have it.
Absolutely. I mean, I get the last couple of weeks, I've just been so angry. I've been mad. I've been sad. I've been confused. And then I'm to the point like I have to talk about it, and it's like but every conversation is so different because if it's, with black person that grew up in a black community is different than talking to a black person who grew up in a white community. And black person with money is different than, a black person who, make a minimum wage. So I'm so confused at times, but it's like I still have to have so many more conversations because I don't know everything, right? And I'm trying the Chris, situations. Like I want to, what do the white people talk about when they're in that room amongst each other? How real does those conversations get? And I want those answers as well. So again, I welcome the conversation. I wish we had a show we could have listeners call in because this is one of those conversations I know we could go for hours upon hours. But again, I'm just going to try to do my part and move the needle, the best way I can. So
Yeah, I'm like you. I've always been interested. Like I said, we know how the dialogue is with us. If it's just athletes versus, like I said, you go to the hood or if you're on the corner street or you go to just say you're holding a workout and then a lot of guys kind of just huddle up after that. You know, we start talking about things. You go to the barbershop. You know, all these conversations are a bit different. So, again, now you just brought some, you know, something to my mind. Like, okay, well, I wonder what those questions or what that dialogue conversation are like with just white people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish I could just be in the room or fly on the wall to kind of honestly see what they're talking about, see what the conversation, how it's initiated, you know, where it goes from there. Just to hear the difference of opinions. And honestly, we've gone through social media and I've seen, you know, little kids, you know, these millennials, they're having discussions with their parents about how the kids are a little bit more aware and accepting of a black person. And because their parents have grown up in an era and a time where they just don't see it the way these millennials, it's just too different. Two different dynamics. And so it's sad, but it alludes to what I mentioned in the show. These are things that are being taught, you know, to these white people at an early age in their upbringing. They're a product of their environment. So,
I think the millennials that you're talking about, again, that I've seen, you know, on TV marching, marching with my own eyes. It's like if those 15 to 30 year olds that are marching out there, if 80% of them are real, like they're, you know, like they're portraying right now, and they really have African Americans back, well, this country's gonna be all right.
Absolutely.
It's so powerful to see somebody stick up for somebody they do not know. So powerful.
Right. And obviously, speaking on that, those millennials, I mean, those 15 to 30 year olds, the age to vote is 18.
Yeah.
So we can get those millennials to go to the polls and vote. And I think, honestly, Trump has done himself a disservice because even if you're white and you work for him, just based on what he's done as far as his leadership and basically caused so much division, then they're going to vote somebody else just because they realize what has happened.
Absolutely.
Since he's been in office, especially these last couple of months.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone, to Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast. Again, it was a great conversation with Chris Long today, 11-year NFL veteran, two-time Super Bowl champion. Great guest today. Had a good time.
And be sure to check out his Greenlight podcast as well.
Yep. Get your Popcorn Ready podcast. Check us out on the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah. Yep. Don't forget to subscribe. Share and swipe up when you see it.
Sharing is caring. Peace.